You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. Rates as low as 0% for 84 months OAC right now. Discover your new road in a Chev this September. Pick it up at lakewoodchev.com. As Colin Livingston joins us in studio once again. Yeah, there's no, is there that type of in-depth physicals in the racing world?
There definitely are. I mean, you think what an Indy driver, an F1 driver, NASCAR drivers, if they've got a pre-existing condition, yeah, they go through very rigorous, physicals. Even to do the one-off races, like when a guy's signed up to do the Indy 500, they have to go through a full day testing, blood work, because they check for, PEDs. They want to make sure that everyone's ready to go, sausage fingers notwithstanding.
Now, speaking of health, Kasey Kahne is going to sit out at least the next three races in NASCAR, so that'll make it four races. They're saying it was just from heat exhaustion. Now, that seems like a long time from one heat exhaustion.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, I've suffered heat exhaustion in the past, and you're going to be fatigued for a period of time, but usually by, within a couple of days, you're back to normal. So there was speculation in one story that I read that said that part of why he's retiring at the end of the year is connected to this this lengthy heat exhaustion. But I don't know. It's just it's terrible to see, because as he's winding out his career, you want to get every race that you can. And, unfortunately, he missed one of the biggest races on the NASCAR calendar at Indy last week.
Sticking with NASCAR, Brad Keselowski wins a Big Machine Vodka 400. What does that do for him? Because that's two in a row already.
That's two in a row of two of the biggest races. Again, I feel like I'm on redundancy setting here, but two of the biggest races are the Southern 500 that we spoke about at Darlington, and then this race at Indianapolis. They found something. They're on a roll, and now that they're the quote unquote regular season is over, they start into the playoffs this weekend in Vegas. They're obviously going to be a team to watch for.
Now, there's all the rumors that Martin Truex Jr. and his crew chief, Cole Pirner, are heading to Joe Gibbs Racing, right? His company had supplied Furniture Row with cars and crew, but then there was the report that came out that they felt that Gibbs and them were maybe doubling their costs in a deliberate attempt to get those guys away from it. Is the racing business that cutthroat?
In general terms, yes and no. Most of these guys, Joe Gibbs, Rick Hendrick, Penske, Mr. Penske, they really carry themselves with a lot of class and dignity in most cases. I'm really surprised to see the stories that were coming out that said over the last year, Joe Gibbs, essentially doubled the rates to provide the cars and the crew to Furniture Row. That doesn't seem right. But in racing, kind of anything goes as long as you're not breaking a rule. But, Furniture Row being the customer team of Joe Gibbs Racing, it really sours the taste of people who are looking to deal with these guys, and for companies that are thinking about, who to line up with, or if they want to start their own team and build their own stuff, or if they want to, contract that out.
So why would Furniture Row, they just didn't have the means to start their own team? Why would they need the help of Gibbs?
Well, we did the same thing in NASCAR when we started, Tagliani Autosport. We worked with 22 Racing and Scott Steckley because we didn't want that responsibility of prepping the cars, repairing the cars. We wanted to handle the commercial aspect of it, sell the sponsors, self-fund, and then we would just pay these guys to do that.
Basically rent the car?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, essentially.
And is that fairly common in that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I mean, down to the point that, a lot of drivers in NASCAR are rental drivers. Like, they just basically pay their way to get into the car. They arrange their own sponsors. And, I wouldn't say it's common. It's not like everyone's doing that. But, not everyone, Scott Steckley or DJ Kennington in the NASCAR Pinty Series, that they spend their days building race cars. Mm-hmm. So for us, we looked at, buying them. But when you look at all the infrastructure you've got to, add with the shop, with full-time staff, with the transporter, with the truck, you're into it for hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that stuff doesn't pay for itself. It's just, kind of an expense.
How much would one NASCAR cost? Like, let's just, to get a NASCAR the first time just on the road, and you're running, I know that once crashes and everything else, that's separate, but what would start to finish to get a car on the road, what's it cost?
To buy it or to build it? Because when you think about building it, you've got to have expertise, and that comes over time. So to become Hendrick, Rick Hendrick Motorsports, they did that over, the last 3.5 decades.
Okay.
To start, from a company, they're originally called All Star Racing. It was just him and some drivers a long time ago that, obviously are long gone and retired. But the trick is, over the years, they found tips and tricks, and they poured countless millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars into engineering over that time. So they know how to do it, and that's really what you pay for when you get these things. A fully equipped stock car to run at the highest level, I mean, you're really talking hundreds of thousands of dollars.
We're talking the Racing Report with Cantorx, Colin Livingston. Colin, let's shift gears a little bit to IndyCar, and we're looking at season finale. And the host is in California, near Napa Sonoma Raceway. What kind of intrigue do we have heading into this weekend?
Well, there's, obviously last race of the year kind of comes down to a couple of contenders. Usually it's down to one or two. This year there's four mathematically eligible, although the two front runners are really Scott Dixon looking for his fifth championship and Alexander Rossi looking for his first. Will Power and Joseph Newgarden are still mathematically eligible, but, as a wise man once said, it's kind of slim and none, and Slim's on a bus out of town right now. They're 86 points back. You can score a maximum of, I think, 105, 106 points in a weekend with this double points finish, which makes it a little bit easier to close that gap.
When did they put in, because usually the win will be worth 100 points, and usually it's worth 50 points. They Correct. Just do that to add intrigue and obviously keep it extended as long as you can. But as a driver, I'm like, man, I could be good all year long, and now this guy wins one race, and suddenly one race is worth double. It just doesn't seem overly fair.
Yeah, Indy 500 gets the same point system, and then the season finale, because they're trying to create as much excitement and keep as many people in as possible. But realistically, it's down to Scott ED and Rossi.
I just want to shift gears. You sent an amazing video of
it wasn't that motorbike, something
the MotoGP,
yeah.
And I'll just set it up, and you can tell what happened. There's two guys on motorbikes going down a straightaway, 140 miles an hour. And then all of a sudden, one of the guys reaches over, and you can fill in what happened.
Yeah, he reaches over and manually grabs the other rider's handbrake. There's no other thing that you could be doing in that situation other than trying to, make that guy wreck. It's one thing, we talk so much about safety here, but it's one thing when you're in a race car where you've got, five-point harness, suit, Hans device, you're encased in your cockpit, you've got protection around you. For this to happen on a motorcycle is absolutely, in my opinion, it's criminal. I mean, aside from the fact that this guy should never be able to get on a motorcycle again, I mean, that's a criminal act. You're deliberately trying to hurt someone by making that. There's a lot of things that happen in racing. I've never seen anything like that.
So that was Romano Fanati. He got the black flag after basically it was San Marino Moto 2 on the straight. They were 140 miles an hour,
yeah,
by
which
the
is
way.
No joke.
Now, he lost his job, did he not?
I didn't see any of the follow-up. I would hope so.
Yeah, I thought he did, and then now people are saying like he has a reputation, because when you sent me that, then I started reading up on him, and he's clearly a hothead on the track, and he was upset because he felt like the guy had cut him off a little bit. So for people, our listeners, I'll visualize it. They're going 140 miles an hour on a straightaway. And this guy, to his credit, obviously he's pretty good on the bike. He takes his left hand, because he's on the right side, guys beside him. He takes his left hand, and then he reaches over to the guy's right handlebar and squeezes a brake. Just gives it a little squeak, squeak. Are you kidding me?
It's absolutely crazy. And that speed to do that, he's actually lucky that he did that. The rider to his left didn't come into him.
Correct.
And it could have been a massive crash. He could have got hurt too. This wasn't just I'll make sure this guy gets his action.
When you get to that point though, there's obviously not a lot of rational thought that goes into it. So you kind of react and you make a decision. But I mean, that kind of thing to me is, a guy's eligible to get a vasectomy with a hockey skate at that point. I couldn't imagine.
And so those types of things would be really rare. There's competing, but there's this in any kind of racing. That to me is there's rubbing racing, whatever you call it. But this is intent to injure.
That's assault.
Yeah.
Yeah. Manslaughter potentially if the guy got really hurt or worse.
It's amazing.
Now, When we look at the, you talk about the playoffs for NASCAR, right? And it's unique playoffs. It's basically, now I've always wondered, and I understand why they don't do it, but you got the chase and there's a 10, but everybody still races, right?
Correct. Yes.
And so the guy's in 11th, he could suddenly go on a tear. Well, you're done.
It's too late.
Is it strictly finances and why they don't just say, you know what? We'll have the playoffs and it's only going to be the 10 cars.
It's, first of all, watching 10 cars on track would be boring.
Okay.
And then as the I always put it in air quotes because I don't think motorsports and playoffs really fit together. I'm not a fan of it myself, but as they progress, you start dropping cars out of the field. By the end of the final, I think that you're down to three cars. So to watch three cars on a racetrack, it's like watching paint dry. So you have to keep, you know, you have to keep the cars out there. Everyone's got a legitimate shot to win. But, you know, through the history of the playoffs, the teams that qualify and the teams that get in are the teams that, you know, seem to be the ones that contend. You very, very rarely see a guy who's out of the playoffs. You know, and there's obviously exceptions. I can already hear people yelling at me on through the radio, but there's always exceptions. But practically speaking, the contenders are the guys that are always going to be up front.
So yeah, no, that's probably
the other part of it is,
what about expanding it to just so there was a cutoff? Because, like, you know, even if you got down to 18 or 20, just so there's an incentive to want to be in that top 20. And then if you don't want to call it playoffs, fine. But it illustrates, okay, these 20 cars have been the best, and now we're going to have the best on the best for 10 races.
Yeah, the problem with that is, as you're going to pitch sponsors and as you're putting you know, marketing programs in place, you don't know if you're going to make the playoffs or not. So you want to base your marketing program and your sponsorship program over the 36 race season. You can't, it'd be really hard to go to, you know, a prime sponsor and say, okay, well, you know, we need to charge you $12 million for this thing, but we maybe will only be in 26 of the races. And then we're going to be sitting on the sidelines watching.
Totally fair.
You know, you want to come to this race at the end of the year. Well, we might not be running. So, you know, we can hang out with you in the grandstands, but you know,
no, that's fair.
Pretty amazing. So when you look at it, then, so those guys are competing, one, to fulfill their contractual obligations with their sponsors. But what about as far as, like, is there ever a situation where they're like, might bring a different, like, is it the same guy in the car all the time where they would say, you know what, Jason's been our driver all year, but we're not going to win this. Let's bring in Colin. Let him race a race. Like, or do you have to have the same driver all the time?
Well, and that would be the way it happens. I would swap out for you, of course, because of my athletic ability and my prowess.
Yeah.
But it's pretty rare. The only times that really happens is when a guy's injured. If he's not performing, they'll often pull a driver out of the car that isn't really contractually linked. Some guys have, you know, essentially ironclad contracts that says as long as they can get in, they will get in. They'll put somebody else in just to evaluate them. That tends to happen more in open wheel than it does in stock cars. And then I had another example in my head, you know, or they'll just fire a guy because he's not performing and you see that. But usually that's not in a top team.
They're not calling a guy up, say, hey, we're out of this. Let's give it a chance.
Yeah. It's not like you get moved down to the farm team and then somebody gets moved up. It can happen, but it's pretty rare. Okay.
And you mentioned Scott Dixon, five championships. Would he ever garner interest to go to F1?
He's had people looking at him for years and years and years. It's just not something that's happened. Even like Scott just signed a new contract and apparently it's supposed to be very lucrative, but he had a lot of interest and there's always a strategy behind getting the top dollar. Especially when you're a valued driver, like Dixon is, that, he played it really smart and he, you know, had, Zach Brown from, McLaren, Formula One team express interest and say, hey, you know, we're going to have room in our cars next year because Alonso was, you know, retiring and Van Dorn, we know now, was on his way out. So they were looking for candidates that would come in with experience that had car control that weren't really hard on the equipment. Scott used that to his advantage and really got an apparently very lucrative deal out of Chip Ganassi.
Now you're heading over to Barcelona and we talk about the profile hydraulic wrenches. What is that, a plastic wrench? What is that?
That is a plastic wrench. Yeah.
Like, is that one of those 3D printed ones?
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. We, with my engineer, Tim, he just made that purchase fairly recently, that lets us do, you know, basically real time prototyping. So we can take a concept, create it on the computer, take, you know, the programming file, what's called a step file, bring it into the 3D printer and create it in, you know, almost no time from concept to completion.
And that's just because it's easier to show people, because if you're a visual person, rather than trying to figure out, oh, this is what it's going to look like on a piece of paper.
We have so many what we think are great ideas, and they look awesome on the computer. But when we go to fit something, or when we go to pressure test something, or we go to function test something, it doesn't work the way that we want it. You know, we neglect to note that a lip is too big or too small, or it's great, but we can't figure out how to put it together once it's in reality. By doing it with plastic, by doing it, you know, in 3D, we can take these things, model them, you know, work on lines, work on the way we want, but then make sure that everything fits. And it doesn't cost an awful lot to print a plastic part, but to do one, you know, if we needed to do this one time, I mean, I could be looking at $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in prototyping charges, because by the time you get things set up, stop the machine shop production, go in, do one off, and then come back and say, nope, that doesn't work. That gets pretty expensive and time consuming.
A little expensive. Kind of like trying on a new stick, eh, Stretty?
Yeah, well, yeah, we get the sticks for free. Yeah. Well, have a safe trip, buddy. Look forward to
you
going for a couple weeks.
We'll see you guys in a couple weeks.